Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 12 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This week, as we continue our series on the nature of God, we're looking at God's righteousness. Our Bible passage for the week is Romans 3, 21-26. I'll read from the English Standard Version, the ESV. But now the righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law, although the law and the prophets bear witness to it. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe. For there is no distinction, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God put forward as a propitiation by His blood, to be received by faith. This was to show God's righteousness, because in His divine forbearance He had passed over former sins. It was to show His righteousness at the present time, so that He might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. I have to admit that the only time I've used the word propitiation in my life is while reading the Bible. I also don't use the words righteous and righteousness much, at least not in everyday conversation, and I assume you don't either. In fact, when I hear the term righteous, I think of this scene from one of my favorite films from the 1980s, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I don't trust this kid any further than I can throw him.
Well, with your bad knee, Ed, you shouldn't throw anybody. It's true.
What is so dangerous about a character like Ferris Bueller is he gives good kids bad ideas.
Uh-huh.
Last thing I need at this point in my career is 1,500 Ferris Bueller disciples running around these halls. He jeopardizes my ability to effectively govern this student body.
Well, makes you look like an ass is what he does, Ed.
Thank you, Grace. I think you're wrong.
Oh, well, he's very popular, Ed. The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, dickheads. They all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
That is why I have got to catch him this time. To show these kids that the example he sets is a first-class ticket to nowhere.
I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not Ferris was a righteous dude. Righteous and righteousness may not be popular terms today, but they appear over 500 times in the Bible. Here are a few verses and passages. The Lord then said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation." God took him outside and said, "Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them." Then he said to him, "So shall your offspring be." Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. For the Lord is righteous, he loves justice. The upright will see his face. The Lord did not hesitate to bring the disaster on us, for the Lord our God is righteous in everything he does, yet we have not obeyed him. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. What did it mean to be righteous in biblical times? When Jesus came on the scene, the Pharisees equated righteousness with keeping the law. But the Bible speaks of Noah and Abraham as righteous men, and they lived before God gave the law to his people during the time of Moses. So what made them and other people righteous? God's people understood righteousness in the context of his gracious, covenantal relationship with them. They knew that God was always righteous or just and fair with them. In return, they needed to be righteous or just and fair with God and with each other. Micah 6:8 puts it well. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, and to love kindness, or mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly. One man who did that was Nicholas Winton. Winton was a righteous man, who created a phony organization, forged documents, and bribed officials to accomplish his goal. His story is coming to theaters in the U.S. a few weeks from now, in mid-March 2024. The film, which stars Anthony Hopkins, is called One Life. I'll give you a short version of his story now, using clips from a 60 Minutes episode from 2014, when Winton was 105 years old. You can watch the full episode on YouTube. In 1938, violence against Jews was escalating in Germany. Once the Munich Agreement was signed, Nazi troops marched unopposed into the Sudetenland, the German-speaking region of Czechoslovakia, and began putting Jews in refugee camps. Sensing that their lives were in danger, Czech Jews began trying to get their children out of the country. In London, a successful 29-year-old stockbroker named Nicholas Winton read and heard news reports of German persecution in Czechoslovakia and wanted to help. Early in 1939, he used a two-week vacation to go to Prague. There he saw camps where 150,000 refugees, including children, faced brutal conditions.
All I knew was that the people that I met couldn't get out, and they were looking for ways of at least getting their children out.
But what made you think you could do it?
I work on the motto that if something's not impossible, there must be a way of doing it.
And Winton went, set up shop in a hotel in the center of the old city in Prague, and began looking into how can I organize getting some of these refugees, particularly the children, out of here.
What kind of experience did he have to qualify him for this immense bureaucratic task?
None.
When Czech Jews found out what Winton was trying to do, several hundred came to him, providing him with information on their children in the hopes that he might save them. Once he got back to London, Winton had to convince British authorities to take him seriously. So he took stationery from an established refugee organization, added children's section to it, and made himself chairman.
So in fact, you managed to do what you did through a little deception, a little smoke and mirrors.
Yes, to a certain extent, yes.
It required quite a bit of ingenuity.
No, it just required a printing press to get the newspaper printed.
From a tiny office in central London, Winton's mother and a team of volunteers worked all day, and Winton worked nights after his day job as a stockbroker. The British government agreed to accept children into the country only if Winton found families to take them. He found willing families, but British authorities were slow in issuing travel documents, so Winton started having them forged. He also bribed people.
Took a bit of blackmail on my part.
You were indulging in blackmail and forgery to get the children out.
I've never heard it put like that before.
But you seem to be enjoying it.
It worked, that's the main thing.
The first 20 children left Prague on March 14, 1939. Violence against Jews spread, but the Nazis allowed Winton's trains to travel in keeping with their policy to cleanse Europe of Jews. In 6 months, seven trains carried 669 children through the heart of Germany to Holland, where they took a ferry to the English coast. From there, they caught a train to London. An eighth train, carrying 250 more, was scheduled to leave Prague on September 1st. But war was declared that day, and the train never left. 77,300 Czech Jews later were eliminated as part of what Nazis called their final solution. Once Witten could no longer help check children, he shut down the children's section. During the war, he volunteered for a Red Cross ambulance unit, then trained pilots for the Royal Air Force. He got married, raised a family, and lived as an ordinary person, telling virtually no one what he had done.
I didn't really keep it secret. I just didn't talk about it.
But eventually, his heroics in 1939 were discovered. In 1988, the BBC learned about Winton's story and began to publicize what he had done. 15 years later, Winton was knighted. He became a national hero in the Czech Republic. He didn't like the adulation. "I'm not interested in the past," he said. He preferred to concentrate on the present and the future. For the last 50 years of his life, Winton helped mentally handicapped people and built homes for the elderly. Throughout his life, he tried to do the right thing and succeeded. Winton died in 2015 at the age of 106. The 669 children he saved got married and had children of their own. Their children did the same, as did their grandchildren. Today, over 15,000 people owe their lives to a humble man who saw a need, a desperate need, and did whatever was necessary to meet that need. A humble and righteous man named Nicholas Winton. Next week, I'll talk about salvation. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.